This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On the Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Helen Rosner is a food correspondent for The New Yorker, and she interprets that beat pretty broadly. She's as likely to write about the ethics of reviewing or the Me Too issues plaguing restaurant kitchens as she is the perfect recipe for rhubarb. So she had a lot to talk about recently with the Los Angeles chef Nikki Nakayama, who's been featured on the Netflix show Chef's Table, and whose restaurant has been called one of the very best in America. Here's Helen.
Not long ago, I had one of the best meals that I've ever had. It was at a restaurant called Ennaka in Los Angeles, and the kind of food that they serve there is called kaiseki. Kaiseki is a type of Japanese cuisine that you might not be familiar with. It's not that common outside of Japan. It's an incredibly formal, ritualized, elaborate meal that unfolds over the course of hours. There are dozens of courses. The chef at Ennaka in Los Angeles is a woman named Nikki Nakayama. I visited her in the kitchen a few days after I'd had my meal at Ennaka, and when I showed up, she gave me a tour.
And then this is our dish pit area, but trust us, it's a lot more organized when we have service. There's just a lot going on because we have so many dishes. It's like incredible. We had to build a shed outside just to house those dishes. That's why we love our dishwasher. Clemente's been with us for 3 years. I feel very fortunate that people want to like hang out with us and stay. And even though we want to kill each other sometimes, it's very normal.
Nakayama was born in LA and she grew up there. Her parents are Japanese immigrants who owned a seafood distribution company, so she spent her time as a kid working in the warehouse or hanging out in the office. She figured she was going to become a musician, maybe a pop star, but she ended up spending 3 years studying traditional Japanese cooking in Japan. And in 2011, the culmination of all of that training and running a couple of other restaurants in LA, she opened Ennaka.
And then this is my work area. I work here.
The kitchen at Ennaka is the first one that Nakayama has been able to build from the ground up. She designed it to suit herself. She's 5'1", and so everything is at counter height or lower. She has notes pasted up by her workstation and near the pass, reminding everyone how to feel, what the mood is, what Ennaka is all about.
But one of the most important notes that I had was actually stuck outside the door, because I felt that this is a very sacred space for me. And I mean, we've all been in kitchens where the environment hasn't always been a friendly one, or it hasn't been like very conducive to, you know, good things. So I had a note outside that said, good things start now. So basically when you walk in, it's like a reminder to tell yourself that leave all your shit outside. Don't bring it in. Don't bring it in. But that's since fallen off. But generally everybody gets the idea.
When Nakayama talks about these unfriendly environments, I think part of what she's referring to is high-end kitchens in general. Those spaces tend to be pretty bro-y. Almost all of the chefs that are running those kitchens are men. And within the already pretty sexist high-end restaurant world, high-end Japanese cuisine is an area that remains particularly closed to female chefs. Nakayama's response to this is to staff her kitchen almost entirely with women. And that includes her right hand in the kitchen and at everything else, her sous chef, Carol Ida.
I am the sous chef here at Ennaka.
And are my partner and wife?
Yes.
Don't forget that part.
You're not just the sous chef. You're important in a lot of ways. Oh, and you have the most beautiful Romanesco.
We don't use a lot of romesco in Japanese food, but I'm sure we'll figure out a way.
Yeah.
Our first and, like, our go-to thing is, okay, let's just use the standard Japanese method to cook it and see what happens. And if all else fails, we just tempura everything.
Kaiseki is incredibly complex and very ritualized. Chefs train for years, sometimes decades, to become kaiseki masters. The difficulty for someone like Nakayama, who's trying to make kaiseki in California, is that the cuisine developed in Japan. It's a meal that reflects Japanese seasons, Japanese terrain. So to try to translate it to California can be complicated.
I think authentic kaiseki can only exist in Japan. Even for us, we've tried to plant certain plants that are native to Japan in this environment, and it doesn't work. Like, we've tried to put moss in that window behind you, and it doesn't survive because the environment doesn't allow for it to be. It's not humid enough. I don't like to call ourselves traditional kaiseki in any way, but I think our heart and our motive and our ideas about it feel very genuine and authentic to us and who we are. Because I think we're combining a lot of our knowledge of what Japanese cuisine is and also our personal experience of Japanese food and the things we know about it, and combining that with our upbringing in America, it's hard to pretend that we don't have one or the other. So the most authentic representation of who we are is to sort of blend a little bit of both.
So when you say we, you're talking about yourself and Carol?
Yes. Yes.
So when you opened in Naka, Carol wasn't in the picture. Did you guys know each other then?
No.
But then you met and started dating, and then you decided to work together?
Yes. And it all happened sort of by chance, and it was a little bit crazy because I'd lost my sous chef that I'd been working with for 9 years. And then she's like, well, I know dashi, and I know Japanese cuisine. Maybe I can come and help you just, you know, do some of the basic things that are really important. And my initial reaction was like, no, you're going to see what a mess I am and how crazy it can be behind there.
So everything is all together.
Yes.
You and Carol have, you were on the Out 100. You've sort of appeared together as a couple, and you're often described in the media as, you know, like a lesbian chef couple, Carol Ida and Nikki Nakayama. Do you think that that's an important part of your identity as chefs, or Naka's identity as a restaurant?
I didn't want that to be out there because I felt that it's already hard enough to be a female chef, to be judged for so many things, and another level of judgment is not what I want people to focus on when they're coming to eat. I want them just to think about the food and what we're creating. But as time has gone by, I realize and recognize that it's important to sort of put a voice out there to sort of encourage more support and more acceptance. I don't necessarily think that it's very important to tie us to that identity, but I understand how if we are positive about it, it's a good thing.
How has it been difficult to be a female chef?
Sometimes one can't help but wonder how serious people are taking you. There are times in the kitchen where I was like, if I was a man, they would never question me about this. But I don't know if that's true or not. I really, really don't. I don't know because I've never been a man. And I don't know what the opposite reaction would be. But sometimes it's easy to sort of fall back on that just to make yourself feel better. But overall, I feel that I've been very fortunate with Ennaka and that it's not an issue anymore. It used to be an issue with the other restaurants that I have, but for here, no.
You've told the story a couple of times of being at your sushi restaurant, was it? And what was it that a man came in and realized that he was going to be served by a woman and got up and left?
Basically, when he walked in, there was a couple of them, and then they walked in and they saw us and then just turned around and left. And I understood that, oh, he probably thought we weren't a serious restaurant, or, oh, this is not a good restaurant. So they just sort of didn't even try.
Sushi seems to be a uniquely sexist culture, even within the already difficult universe of fine dining. Sushi is really still the realm of men.
That is very true. I think for men in Japan, to have a woman in the kitchen is a distraction for them. And there's this constant belief that women have certain roles that we need to play. And when we're not doing that, we're being rebellious to structure. And rebellion to structure is like a number one no-no in Japan.
So all of your diners here at Annaka know who you are, right? You're pretty well known now. You've been on TV. You've been on a lot of magazine stories. Why do you still cook with the screen closed in front of the kitchen?
I cook with the screen closed because, well, overall, I do enjoy to be the ability to completely focus on the work. And I feel that it's a lot better for the environment to not have it be open kitchen. It's very intimate, and the industrial feeling of the kitchen is very overwhelming and not conducive to a nice, relaxing feeling. But most of all, I want people to come here and think about the food and not think about who's cooking.
So how has Annaka changed since you were on Chef's Table? So what happened?
So the first day Chef's Table came out, we were still taking reservations that were like where the phone was being forwarded to my cell phone. And I remember that it got really hot and we had to turn it off. And then Carol and I just sat there and stared at it for a bit. And we're like, what are we going to do? She's like, this cannot happen. We've got to figure out a plan. And then I was like, who's going to take all those messages? I'm not going to take it anymore. I mean, we were booking up maybe like a week ahead, or at least every day we had customers in a good stable amount. But after Chef's Table came out, we became like a restaurant that was booking out 3 months in advance. But seriously, when that happened, Kara and I were like, we need to have a meeting with our staff because expectation levels are going to be really, really high, and we need to make sure that people come in don't get disappointed. So that was the first thing on our mind. It's like, let's not piss anybody off.
Nikki Nakayama, the chef at Annaka, speaking with Helen Rosner of The New Yorker.
I'm Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, our team has been reporting high-quality news about science, technology, and medicine. News you won't get anywhere else. And now that political news is 24/7, our audience is turning to us to know about the really important stuff in their lives. Cancer, climate change, genetic engineering, childhood diseases. Our sponsors know the value of science and health news. For more sponsorship information, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.